It's Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ, Boston's News Radio.
My thanks to my guest last hour, Horace Cooper of Project 21. A very thoughtful, I think, discussion on the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. Now we will have a thoughtful discussion on a very different subject, and that is China and the U.S. relationship with China as we transition from the Trump administration to the Biden administration. Joining me now is Dr. Gregory Stoller of Boston University's Questrom School of Business. Dr. Stoller is a senior lecturer and probably knows more about China and the business of China than anyone that I have ever heard of. How many trips have you made to China, Dr. Stoller, over...
It's just Greg, by the way, but thank you, Dan. Good to be back. I've had over 50 trips to China. I think maybe 57 or 58
trips to China, and many of them you brought students from the schools that where you have taught. You've taught at Boston College, and now you're at Boston University at the Questrom School of Business, and you have brought students over to China with you at least once a year. Obviously, you did not do it last year because of the problems with COVID, but how many years have you been bringing students over to China for?
Well, I've been very happily at BU's Questrom School of Business. I'm now in the middle of my sixth year. We go a couple times a year in January with our MBA students and other graduate students from across BU. And then in March, we take our undergrads to visit companies. The January trip is for consulting. But all told, I've been lucky enough to be doing this for nearly 20 years, taking students over to either consult or study companies in the field.
Well, China is such a big country and obviously such a populous country, 1.2 or 1.3 billion, whichever you want to refer to. From the 30,000-foot view, and we want to get into a number of issues and also invite callers to join the conversation, but we'll get to those callers in a few minutes. How different will China look at us now that Donald Trump is leaving the White House and Joe Biden and a different administration? How sophisticated will their leadership be in terms of a different administration?
I think that China and a lot of the Asian countries, they very much like knowing what to expect. And I think the challenge with Trump, and I should preface all these comments, Dan, by saying that I don't introduce religion or politics into my classes. I'm a business teacher. I'm not a political scientist.
Yep,
so
sure.
A lot of these comments are going to be within the sphere of business. But I think that China especially works well when they know what to expect during a negotiation, when they know what to expect when it comes to a business relationship. The challenge with Trump was he was unpredictable. I think that everybody is looking forward to the Biden administration. That's not to say that I think anybody in China or any of our foreign partners or even adversaries are going to run roughshod over the United States just because there's going to be a change on Wednesday in the inauguration. But I think that people are going to feel a little more confident from the business side of things if they know that there's a plan of attack.
So when we look at China right now, one of the huge issues that appears to me, and again, you're the expert, I'm not, but what is going to happen in Hong Kong and what has been happening in Hong Kong? That has to be high up on the agenda of the Biden administration.
Oh, absolutely. I think that there are three or four issues that they need to tackle. First and foremost, I think that the Biden administration's first priority is going to be to get our domestic house in order. And I think before he tackles any foreign policy challenges, I think he wants to get as many Americans vaccinated and wants to put this virus to bed as quickly as possible. But I think it's not just Hong Kong. I think that there is the ongoing Uyghur incident in Xinjiang which is in the Western province. I think there's the Taiwan issue, there's the Hong Kong issue, and of course, dealing with mainland China, which in and of itself is a challenge, trying to restart trade and make sure that American companies are going to be able to thrive and vice versa and get things back to where we were, you know, pre-Trump, et cetera.
But correct me if I'm wrong, but dealing with Hong Kong is now dealing with mainland China.
Oh, absolutely. Let's call it what it is, in the sense that Hong Kong reverted back to mainland Chinese rule in the late 90s after their lease ended with the United Kingdom. I think like any situation that if you buy a house, even if the prior owner said, well, we prefer that you kept the house blue, or we'd prefer you kept the house green. If you buy it, unless there's something in writing, then you have, in theory, the opportunity to change it. I think the challenge is that what the People's Republic of China thinks are going to be good changes are not necessarily respected by lifelong Hong Kongers and certainly other people. And most recently, the new Hong Kong national security law came into effect on June 30th, 2020, and has really upset a lot of people, depending on what perspective you take on all of this.
Well, if China were to lay claim to Hong Kong and to say that whatever existed before no longer exists and now Hong Kong is part of China, that would have reverberations not only in Hong Kong and in Asia, but around the world, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that what everybody was hoping for is that one country, two systems was not just going to be a 5-year or a 7-year plan, but is going to be a permanent plan. And again, I think it's very important, and I talk about this in my classes frequently, it's not a one-size-fits-all strategy. There is a certain percentage of this world that thinks it's unconscionable that China's changing anything, whereas another high percentage of the world thinks it's unconscionable that China isn't changing anything. And I think it really depends on, and I hate to make it a we versus them or something of that ilk, but I really think it depends on what perspective you are approaching all of this from.
Well, other than China, what country in the world would welcome China essentially reasserting itself in Hong Kong even more than it's asserted itself already?
Well, I think you have a number
Japan
of countries.
And South Korea wouldn't want that, I assume.
Oh, absolutely. But think about other countries, smaller countries, that are getting a lot of aid from China. And I think that during the Trump administration, a lot of them figured that they're going to keep their mouth shut and sort of just accept it. The foreign policy publication in preparation for tonight said that many of China's neighbors were and are steadily drifting towards either neutrality between Beijing and Washington or simple acceptance of being dominated. I think that if you have ongoing business relationships, countries have learned that as much as they might not agree with the policies, that for the moment they're going to, not make any waves. And it's a real challenge.
Yeah, and obviously there are countries geographically that are very much in the sphere of influence of China, which they're the big dog in that particular yard, and the a lot of those countries out there have to listen to what the big dog says and understand what the big dog does. I want to take a break. Greg Stoller, Professor Greg Stoller, Boston University Questrom School of Business, has been back and forth to China upwards of 60 times. In the last quarter century, and changes are afoot in China. There's a whole bunch of issues we need to talk about, but even more importantly is the overriding question here is if the 20th century was the century of the United States, some truly believe that the 21st century will be the century of China. And obviously, a change of administration in Washington will have an impact one way or the other. And we're going to try to figure that out with Professor Stoller. And your calls, 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. The ladies' line, 617-931-1030. Let's light them up and we'll get conversation going with you as well as Professor Stoller from Boston University. I think China is such an important issue, and I realize that the Biden administration has to worry about COVID, has to worry about the economy, has to worry about the deficit and the debt, has to worry about the southern border, but I think China has to be right up there with the most important issues that this new administration will face and may actually be tested by. Back on Nightside after this.
It's Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ, Boston's news radio.
My guest, Professor Gregory Stoller, Greg Stoller of Boston University. Greg, how will China test the Biden administration?
Dan, I've been fortunate to be on your show for several years now. I strongly believe that free trade and globalization is going to win out. I think so many of us, and me included, get caught up in the here and now and saying this policy is only 3 or 4 months old and what's going to happen. I think if you look at business history going back to the Great Depression in the States, free trade and globalization has always worked consistently well. Yes, you might need a tariff. You might need a quota. You might need something to nudge things back into the middle of the road. But permanently going after someone as a foe as opposed to a competitor, I just don't think is going to work. And that's why I think for the moment, China is going to decide early on whether they trust Biden, whether they like Biden and the administration, and what they make of his first 100 days in office.
So my thought is that with the disputed area in the South China Sea where the islands have been built during the last few years, that might be a testing ground. Is that, again, I'm not looking to get into the politics of it. I'm just wondering.
I appreciate that. I think that, you can't fight a war on multiple fronts simultaneously and do it well. I'm certainly not in a position to be advising President Biden, but I personally think that the biggest area that he might want to consider focusing on first is going to be getting trade back on track and not necessarily worrying about these other topics. Now, I know that you're going to say, Dan, your listeners might well say that the other topics collectively might be larger than the trade issue, but at the end of the day, ultimately, if the U.S. economy is going to get back on track, we need China as a partner and vice versa in terms of continuing where we sort of left off when Obama left office.
Yeah. One of the things that scares me about China is that as a result of the COVID-19, I've learned, and I did not realize, that China actually produced so many of our medicines and our medications. Is that something that needs to be addressed? Again, we are, that certainly is a trade issue.
Oh, absolutely. I personally think that any country, and the United States is certainly no exception, I think that decoupling the United States across as many industries as possible so it can be more independent and more self-sufficient. I've always believed that having a diverse set of approaches is the right way to go, whether it be oil, whether it be manufacturing, whether it be services. You just don't want to put all of your eggs in one basket. And again, I'm talking as a business person, not as a political scientist.
No, I get that.
But if you
were you surprised? I mean, or did you realize that so much of our, medical...
No. In fact, you brought that up almost a year ago when we did our last segment.
Yeah.
And I went home that night. Actually, I think I was home, but the minute we got off of your show, I started feverishly looking it up online. And then I remember emailing you the following day. You're right that so many of our pharmaceuticals back in what happened in Puerto Rico years ago are now being produced not only by China, but so many other countries. Obviously, China, as you said, is the biggest dog in the yard. That was a pretty sobering cold shower moment for me when I realized that could be a real problem from a health and safety standpoint. And it has nothing to do with China, just having so much of your medication be coming from outside of your own borders is challenging, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, it is a supply line problem as well as a control of the pharmaceuticals issue if China wanted to shut the supply line down. That's what scared the heck out of me, particularly in terms of this. Look, we have full lines. Real quickly, let's talk about the Uyghurs in Western China. 1 to 2 million people, perhaps. Clearly, China is not happy about them. And there are re-education camps where these people are being re-educated. How can the Biden administration, or should the Biden administration, raise that issue?
It's a great question.
And I know that gets us near politics, but I'm just wondering.
I appreciate that. Yeah. And I sort of are going to say, I don't think you can consistently keep 18 balls in the air. Well, I think you have to decide that some balls are bigger and more important than others. I will say that the numbers are the numbers in the sense that there are over 11 million Uyghurs in Xinjiang, which is one of the Western provinces.
So more than I realized, 11 million. But of course, in a population of 1.2 billion, that is a minority.
Absolutely. I mean, they're only 0.3% of all of China's population. I mean, you're not talking about a large number, but 1 million out of 11 million are allegedly in these forced labor camps. I will say that, again, from a business perspective, something that I think is interesting, which, again, is not just isolating China, there's a company out of New Zealand that is now able to test cotton and determine where it's coming from in the world. And the United States also has introduced a new policy, which is called the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act. And based on that New Zealand technology, if they have determined that a lot of that cotton is coming from China or other nations, again, I don't want to be dumping on China, then they reserve the right to not accept those shipments in the U.S. ports and try and keep everybody all over the world on the same even playing field. Well,
There was a time.
I was going to say, go ahead.
I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead, Greg.
No. All I was going to say is I think this is an innovative use of business technology, again, to try and encourage free trade and globalization by putting everybody on an even footing.
There was a time.
And I interrupted you.
No, there was a time not that long ago when Jimmy Carter was president, when the watchword of human rights was displayed a lot more prominently by U.S. administrations, and I wonder if this administration, you know, recognizing globalization also may temper their embrace of globalization with concerns over human rights. Let's do this, Greg. Go ahead.
No, what I was going to say is I think it would be great if the Biden administration could score a couple of international wins. Obviously, there are a lot more countries in the world than just China. But with respect to the U.S.-China relationship, I think it would be great if both countries could mutually establish some wins early on in the first 100 days in office. I think that psychologically, if you get people feeling better about things mutually, which I just never really thought was the case when Trump was in office. I mean, he's still in office for a couple of days, but I think if psychologically the Chinese and the United States felt better about our relationship, a lot of these issues would be a lot easier to tackle now that people are calmer about it.
My guest, Dr. Greg Stoller of Boston University Questrom School of Business, going to go to phone calls right after the break at the bottom of the hour and a brief newscast. My name's Dan Ray. This is Nightside. It is 10:29 here in Boston, all up and down the East Coast of America. Join the conversation, 617-254-1030. Write it down when the line comes free, 800-929-1030. Back on Nightside after this.
Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ, Boston's news radio.
This is Dan Ray, and you know you never have to miss a second of Nightside. Just go to nightsideondemand.com. There you'll find hour-long segments and full shows. With Nightside on Demand, you can listen to Nightside anywhere, anytime. It's Nightside at your fingertips. So just go to nightsideondemand.com to catch up or listen back to any show on your time.
Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ, Boston's news radio.
Thank you, Dan Watkins. My guest, Dr. Gregory Stoller of Boston University Questrom School of Business, talking about China and will it be one of the early tests for the Biden administration. Professor Stoller is I think, sketching out a strategy whereby the Biden administration might be well advised to try to come up with some agreements. You know, again, I want to go right to phone calls, but very quickly, I remember when President Trump brought the leader of China to Washington and took him down to Mar-a-Lago.
Xi Jinping.
Xi Jinping. And at that time, they seemed to be getting along swimmingly. It doesn't seem that they ended up where they started.
No, not at all. I think that for everybody who says you should take a knock'em sock'em type attitude, I have to say that I applaud what the Trump administration was trying to do. At least in my lifetime, it was the more memorable occasion that you really saw two countries going at each other in a fairly belligerent, you know, non-military, but a fairly belligerent way. And of course, you had, you know, people like Mike Pompeo using, you know, pretty strong language and ideological references. I don't think it matters if you're a Democrat or a Republican. I don't necessarily think that was such a successful tack. And, you know, again, I think it was.
But it also was complicated, I think, by COVID-19 and what came out of Wuhan.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I mean, you know, Dan, from all of your political knowledge, which I don't have, but nothing exists in a vacuum. You need to react to the situation around you. But, you know, sure, try it out. Try the if you don't do this, we'll do the, if you don't do X, we'll do Y. If you do Y, we'll do Z. I think it was worth a try. I don't necessarily think it was terribly successful. And I think it's time to try something else. But remember that the Chinese strongly believe in a relationship, and they believe in a long-term relationship. And I'm going to tell you that I have an 18-year relationship with one of our clients in China that sponsor this international consulting project. I'm very, very fortunate to have them in my court. We've had ups and downs, and no relationship is going to be perfect, but there's a much longer perspective that is taken when you're dealing with the Chinese.
Absolutely, because they don't think in terms of decades. They think in terms of not even centuries, millennium. Let's go to the phone call. It's going to go to Joe and Millis. Folks, looking for questions and quick comments, feel free. You're on, Joe, with Professor Greg Stoller. Go right ahead, Joe.
Good evening, Dan. Good evening, Professor Stoller. Thank you for taking my call.
Welcome.
Now, the Chinese want to control the world's oil, and they want to take over the World Bank and shift trading oil instead of dollars using the yen. If they
the yuan.
Successful, pardon?
I think it's the yuan. Is that their currency?
That's correct. The renminbi or the yuan, correct.
Okay. All right. They want to trade oil in their currency. What would that do to the value of the oil, considering they play with the value of their money so much?
No, it's a great question. I think that if you look back to the euro, if you look back to the Deutschmark, if you look back to the British pound, a lot of countries over the years have successfully tried to introduce their own currency or strengthen their own currency. It really hasn't been successful over the long term, because ultimately it has to cover the cost of goods sold. I'm trying to look at this objectively, because my job is really, especially in the classroom and even on Dan's show, is to try and look at this equally from both sides. I understand what the Chinese are trying to do, and I think Dan is absolutely right. If the last century was the century of the United States growth, this century could well be China's turn, et cetera. But like we were talking about before, Joe, nothing happens in a vacuum. Yes, you could hedge against a currency to control the price of oil, but there's going to be a lot of other economic fallout that occurs. And it's not just going to be oil that you're hedging against. You're talking about other products and services that make up a great deal of your GDP. So, yeah, I mean, you could certainly try it, but remember the knife cuts in not just both directions, but multiple directions simultaneously.
Right. And they were very close to taking over the World Bank before the Trump administration. And I hope that the Biden administration doesn't practice an appeasement. I just don't feel like that's the nature to go. In Portugal, we had a military base that the Chinese wanted to buy from Portugal. Were they successful?
That is still an ongoing issue. You know, what China is trying to do is they are trying to establish long-term supply ports. They started off in Europe. They've then moved to Latin America. They've then moved to Africa, etc. I don't view it as necessarily world domination as much as they are trying to provide a hedge, whether it be for oil or concrete or a score of other resources, etc. The Portugal issue is sort of ongoing in the sense that a lot of countries have determined that if they don't make those payments, then China can come in and basically wrest control of those factories or those ports, especially if they're state assets. So as a result, people are treading extremely cautiously. And to Dan's point a few moments ago, especially in light of what's happening with COVID.
That's the most important port to close in on the Mediterranean.
All right, Joe, appreciate the call.
Thank you, Dan.
Really good questions.
Great question, Joe. Thank you for calling in.
Appreciate it. Let's go next to Ron in Brockton. Ron, next on Nightside, Professor Greg Stoller. Go right ahead, Ron.
Good evening, Dan. Good evening, Professor Stoller. A little while ago, you said you don't know if China's going to like Biden's policies or like Biden. They love them.
Okay.
They love them. I mean, you're a business in the business trade, right?
He's a business professor, yes.
Business professor. You know, if you can get me that job, Hunter Biden got, I'll give you 90% of my pay. I know how to plug in an extension cord, and I know how to screw in a light bulb.
I think, Rod, that part of the reason why China is going to be a little bit more fond of President Biden, or now President-elect Biden, is remember that he's not an unknown quantity to them, given that when he was VP under Obama, he did a number of trips over to China. And again, I'm looking at this over the long term, regardless of whether one of his kids are involved or not. It's very easy to have a relationship with someone you previously have known, even if they were in a different role or in a different seat when you first established that relationship.
Yeah, including the big guy. You know, China makes everything. We don't want to bite the hand that feeds us. So we ain't going to start no big fight with them anyway. Because if we do, we're bumming. Because they own our medication. Everything I look at in my house is made in China. You know, if they shut us off, what are we going to do?
All right, Ron.
That's
as dystopian a view as we've heard tonight, but I appreciate it anyway.
All right.
Thanks, Ron. Talk to you soon. Have a great night.
Have a good night, guys. Thanks.
Good night. 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. Got a couple of open lines. Jump on board, folks. Jimmy and Canton. Jimmy, next on Nightside, talking about China with Professor Greg Stoller of Boston University School of Business. Go ahead, Jim.
How you doing, Dan? Professor, I just was wondering, as part of a topic, how's China doing with the virus? Anyway, the context over there, how are they doing?
So that's a really good question. It depends what news you read. It depends on which contacts I'm in touch with. I think what has been particularly interesting is that the virus, and I read a lot of this in Chinese from the Chinese press, is their economy actually expanded by 2.3% in 2020. By contrast, the United States contracted by 3.6%. That was recently calculated by the Wall Street Journal a couple of days ago. I think that in many cases, the virus is under control. I also have talked with a number of people, boots on the ground, both who are Chinese and expatriates working over there. And they have said that a lot of people don't need to wear masks and life is reverting to some semblance of normalcy.
My understanding was that when this first occurred in China, they literally took people who were they treated the people who had COVID quite differently. That people were literally put in isolation. They fed them and all of that, but it was the heavy foot of the state came down for better or worse. That individuals, once it was learned that you had COVID, you were extracted from the general population. They were very severe limitations, make whatever limitations were put on us here look minor. Right or wrong on that one, Greg?
Oh, absolutely. And a couple of the European countries did the same thing. They also did that in South Korea. and it seems to be working. Again, I'm not so sure that the ACLU in the United States would necessarily approve, but it depends what your objectives are. And I think to China's credit and to Sweden's credit and to South Korea's credit, a little bit of draconian measure certainly got the virus under control a lot faster.
Well, South Korea was draconian, but I thought that Sweden was sort of the laissez-faire capital of the world on this one. Did I miss that?
Yeah, but they seem to have gotten it under control. It might not have been Sweden, but definitely one of their contiguous neighbors, in the sense that I think that we as Americans, and I say this whenever I'm lucky enough to be on your show, I'm very proud to be an American. I always have been. But having lived overseas for several years and, experienced different parts of the world, as much as we take it for granted that we have our First Amendment rights, which I think are fantastic, sometimes draconian in these very, very unique circumstances tends to work better than not.
Yeah, and our own impulse toward freedom, and we tend not to want the government. Most of us feel the government that governs least governs best, and we don't want the government telling us what to do. I mean, there's a lot of people who don't even want to wear a mask, never mind be taken from your home, as I believe happened in Chinese cities, and people were basically put in isolation. They were fed, food was brought to them, but they were in isolation. Jim, you have another follow-up comment or question?
No, I just was wondering how they were doing. Maybe I should ask the professor this about, we really never got an explanation from China about how this all happened, have we?
Don't hold your breath on that one, Jim. Go ahead, professor.
I think that, I have read, again, both in the Chinese and English press, in terms of what happened. I don't believe in the conspiracy theories. I don't think that it was hatched in a Chinese lab. I don't think that someone was trying to use military technology. I think it was just bad luck. And in preparing for other segments on Dan's show, this is not the first virus that we've experienced. If you think about SARS, if you think about avian flu, if you think about, AIDS in this country and around the world, I should mention, in the 80s and the 90s, you just have these odd times that these viruses just temporarily run rampant. But I'm the first to concede that this one is a doozy. This is really causing the epidemiologists to work overtime.
Yeah, and there was a story, I think it might have been in the Globe this morning, that they were investigating some huge cave populated by thousands, if not tens of thousands, of bats in Thailand. The avian flu obviously is bird flu. Bats,
right.
You got Ebola to add to the list. A lot of this stuff going around, and how this one spread so effectively and efficiently is another question. That's for sure. I mean,
right. And by the way, I just looked it up. It was Denmark. It wasn't Sweden. I misspoke.
No problem. Yeah. Sweden. I think it was. Yeah. I think they did the least.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I knew it was one of the European countries. I just had to look it up, but it was indeed Denmark.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Jim. Appreciate your call. We'll be right back with more phone calls.
Thanks, Jim.
My guest, Professor Greg Stoller, the BU Questrom School of Business, talking about China and the tests that any new administration will face and what might happen. It's something that the Biden administration, it is one of the big problems that any new administration is going to have to at least be thinking about. Coming back on Nightside right after this.
You're on Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ, Boston's News Radio.
Back to the phones we go. Going to go to Mike in Braintree. Mike, welcome. You are next on Nightside with Dr. Gregory Stoller of Boston University School of Business. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, hey, Dan, Professor, it's a great show per usual, Dan. I love the forum.
Thank you.
With all the stuff in the news, what can you believe, what can't you believe? But I guess I definitely don't believe anything that comes out of the Chinese government. I don't think any of their numbers are trustworthy. Whether our numbers are trustworthy or not is always a debate. But as far as China goes, I don't know why anyone would believe anything they say. What I'm trying to figure out, sir, is the fact that we live in America, right? It's a capitalistic society. By bringing a bunch of college students over to China, I mean, what are you trying to teach them? how not to do business, how not to have labor laws.
Yeah,
give the professor a chance to explain this one, Mike. Mike, I think you're going to find it interesting. Go ahead, Greg.
So, Mike, I think it's a very fair question. I think that it is really important to put people in situations where they have to confront experiences that you just simply can't teach in a classroom. And you're right, dealing with any non-American country is challenging.
Communist country.
Communist country, sir.
Yeah. Mike, just give him a chance to explain. I'm going to cut you off, Mike. Go ahead. Let's listen to his explanation. Then you can respond. Yeah. Go ahead.
Sure. And as one of the callers, I think it was Joe who said earlier, you look around any house and so many of the products are coming. It happens to be from China. The fact of the matter is, like them or hate them, it's a fact of all of our lives is that so much of the products that we use come currently from that part of the world. You know, in the 80s and 90s, it was Japan Inc. And who knows where it could be in the 2020s and 2030s. I think it's important to learn how to deal with those cultures and with those countries. So, yes, a lot of the experiences are not going to be perfect, Mike, by any stretch of the imagination. But remember, for my trip in March, we don't just go to China. We go to Hong Kong. We go to South Korea. We go to Tokyo. We go to Vietnam. You know, there's a whole big world out there. And I'll be honest with you, some of those visits are perfect textbook, couldn't be better. Other ones, the students leave scratching their heads and ask me the very same question you did, which is, what was the point of this? Are you trying to teach us what not to do? But I think that's part of getting a good education.
Mike, go ahead if you want to respond.
So, I mean, I do. There's a lot there. But when you talk about dealing with other countries aren't run by a communist dictatorship. So you can't really compare dealing with other countries with dealing with China. And to get back to, you know, China makes everything for us. Well, who allowed that to happen and why did we allow it to happen? Why are we in a situation now where we need them to make us cheap goods? I mean, again, I guess we didn't see the writing on the wall or we ignored
right.
it because so many people were profiting from it or whatnot. But also one other thing I'd like to say, with the amount of espionage that's going on between China and our colleges, are you worried, sir, that, you know, you are secretly a part of that? And thanks again, and have a great night, guys.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing that up.
Okay.
Absolutely tell you 1,000% that I disclose everything I do. There's nothing I'd like to believe for me to be worried about. Remember, Mike, I'm teaching business. I'm not talking about the communist regime. I'm not talking about IP theft or human rights. I'm not going to tell you that those aren't important areas to study. That's not what I know how to do. What I know how to do is to advise people on how to get deals done and learn how businesses practice. You are absolutely right. A lot of people think that they shouldn't or we shouldn't be purchasing from China or from Cuba or, you know, pick whatever, you know, country you want that you don't agree with its politics. I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. I think that'd be inappropriate. You're entitled to your opinion. My goal is to give students a business education, bar none.
My guest is Professor Greg Stoller. He is a senior lecturer at the BU Questrom School of Business. Let me get one more call in. And folks, if you're on the line, I'd like to hold Professor Stoller over into the next hour. But in the meantime, let me get to Donna in Braintree. Donna, you're on Professor
Greg. I would
love it.
Yeah.
Stoller, go ahead, Donna.
Good evening, gentlemen. I have a couple quick comments. One of them is regarding the coronavirus in China. Not that we can believe much of what comes out of there, but I was reading about this week, and I pulled it up while I was waiting. They're having a problem now in Heilongjiang, and I know I'm butchering the name, and in Hebei, and let's see, Beijing, and they have now starting in
Shanghai. Yeah, there is a little bit of a bounce back. You're absolutely right. Go ahead, Professor.
Okay.
Professor.
Yeah, I think you're referring to Hebei, which is one of the larger regions, et cetera. That's what I'm saying. You know, I don't think this was the mark of a military conspiracist or a lab experiment that went rogue. I think this is really hard to contain. And to Dan's point a few moments ago, and we saw this pre-Thanksgiving, when people stay home, and when people isolate themselves, either self-isolation or government-imposed isolation, infection rates go down. All right. It's just
Let me get on Donna's second point in before we have to break for the news, and we'd like to hold you over if it's okay.
Great. I thank you. No, thank you for the opportunity. I love it.
Go ahead, Donna. Okay, what's your second point?
The second point is I'm a retired nurse, but my daughter is a nurse now, and we've known forever that there are drug shortages. Every week you get a list, and the list says what you're short of. Now, my daughter's been working at one of the big Boston hospitals all through the coronavirus, and she would cry on the phone to me last spring and say to me, "Mom, we don't have enough of the drugs we need so that we can guarantee people a good death, things that would, you know, make them tired enough and sleepy enough."
All right,
well,
we've got 30, Donna, got 30 seconds left. You want a quick question or a comment, or you just want to let that stand?
Just a comment to let it stand, but one more comment. When people isolate, as a professor said, infections go down. The problem is this is a pandemic. As long as there are hosts, it will keep going. You let people out, and it comes back. So locking people down is not the solution. It's only the solution to keep your hospitals from being overwhelmed. It is not the solution to getting rid of this. It will not work.
Okay. All right, Donna, that's not quite. Thank you for that information, and thank you, daughter, for what she does. I got to let you go because I'm up on the 11 o'clock news. To John in Ohio and Will in Long Island and Fred in Tewksbury, stay there. You'll be first up on the other side. Professor, senior lecturer Gregory Stoller of Boston University will stay with us talking about China. Join the conversation.